Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. Before we get into today's podcast, I just want to give everybody a reminder that we had the UK Investor Magazine virtual investor conference, which took place on Tuesday. So all of the recordings of the company presentations are now available on the UK Investor Magazine website. So for today's podcast, we're very kindly joined by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello, Jonathan. Good to be back.
So we've got a number of stocks that we're going to cover later on in the podcast. But to start with, Alan, let's just take a look at markets and the most pressing issues at the moment. And that, of course, is Brexit. That's very much in the horizon in terms of how we're going to be seeing markets play out. I mean, in your view, when you're looking at Brexit now, there hasn't been a great deal of fallout in markets recently. I mean, do you think to some extent that people are pricing in a very bad fallout from the Brexit scenario? Or do you think that this is still to come and really markets are pricing that they're going to come up with an agreement?
I think the outcomes either way are priced in. And I think we've said before that it's still a giant game of brinkmanship, who blinks first. And I think the EU, let's not forget that this works both ways. If we leave without a deal, it obviously impacts on the UK economy on a number of levels, but it will also impact on the EU economy. And we've had the EU Parliament have been warned by many, many members not to treat us with the arrogance that they were treating us or the way in which they were treating us a year ago. And I think we have seen Barnier concede a little more and he's seemingly prepared to extend the talks up to the point where we can just get everything resolved. So I think we will leave with a deal. I think we will come out with a deal that works for both parties. And the markets, I think, are looking at this and thinking and taking the view that we will sort of come out of it with a deal. And let's not forget, I mean, you know, everyone's making this out to be a massive thing. Yes, it is a huge thing. But afterwards, if something isn't right, nobody's going to be foolish enough to say, oh, we can't fix that. It's too late now. We can go back and revisit it. You know, I do think, you know, everyone's thinking the world is going to end on that day. It won't. It will continue. And I think the markets do accurately reflect that view. If something needs fixing or tweaking or changing, then it will be fixed. I'm absolutely sure of it.
Okay, so it's obviously not just the markets that are keeping an eye on Brexit. We had the Bank of England, which is going to be giving their sort of verdict on markets with their decision on interest rates and stimulus later on today. So it's widely expected that they will hold off and refrain from taking any action at this point in terms of more stimulus. But there has been talks of negative interest rates. Of course, we've seen it in Europe. We've seen it in Japan. I mean, in your view, Alan, I mean, should this be something that investors are concerned about, this concept of taking rates negative in the UK? And do you think that the markets are ready to some extent to take on the fallouts or the reaction if the Bank of England was to consider and actually take rates negative?
Well, of course, the banks get charged to park their money with the US Fed or the central banks when there's a move to negative interest rates. And of course, what that means is the banks pass on those fees to savers. So there was a survey undertaken by Aegon, the insurer, undertook a survey of savers, and 43% of those asked that they would withdraw their money from the bank and put it into a stocks and shares ISA or straight into the stock market to boost their pension positions. So ironically, if there is a move to interest rates, there seems to be good anecdotal evidence supporting possibly increased liquidity, increased volume in the markets, which of course could well push the markets higher.
Indeed, and I think that's something that we've seen in Europe. You know, that additional liquidity is seen as good. I mean, it's not a given that the UK Central Bank, the Bank of England, are going to take rates negative, but certainly that conversation is becoming more prominent now. And I think it's one of the tools that they will keep in reserve if we do see a continued negative fallout from of course, COVID-19, and as we just discussed there on Brexit. So just before we get into these three stocks, Alan, we're moving towards the end of 2020, moving into 2021. I mean, in terms of the sort of biggest themes for markets going forward, I mean, do you see a change in 2021? I mean, of course, this year we've been discussing COVID-19. Of course, that's the most foremost issue in markets. We've had the US elections. Joe Biden will be the new president, and of course Brexit. You know, they've been the three foremost themes for the year. I mean, do you think that the themes for 2020 are going to be sort of stuck around those issues still, or do you see something new coming in and markets the narrative really changing?
I think it's going to be more the same, certainly for the first part of the year. And obviously, COVID, we're now seeing a different strain of the virus in I think Kent that's been identified already. So we know COVID is going to mutate. So that battle will continue. And we have the vaccines now, but there are companies developing improved methods of testing, identification, and also ways of administering the vaccine as well. You know, there's a nasal application being trialled now by Open Orphan in East London with a company called Codagenix. So this is going to carry on developing. In regard to the general economy, we're going to see a lot of fallout. We've already seen, of course, fallout with Debenhams and Arcadia stores. There's going to be more retail fallout. I think in the January trading statements in the new year, I think it's going to be, we could see some more companies go to the wall by the end of quarter one. Very sad, but that's just the way the retail sector is evolving. Ironically, I was driving back down the M1 last night on a completely separate matter, and I drove past, there's a huge logistics center, close to Rugby. And of course, you've got this giant Amazon building, which must be about half to three quarters of a mile long, that dominates the side of the motorway. But I think the online companies are going to carry on growing, the logistics companies that support those that distribution network will continue to grow as well. And of course, Brexit. We've already said we think the market's got that. I think the market's got that priced in. The other thing, of course, is that the cost of the COVID crisis, I think, is some $28 trillion globally to date. That's going to rise a lot more. And of course, that is going to have the net effect of impacting on currency as governments continue investing into assets to support the market. So it's going to drive gold miners further. We've seen a big run this year already for junior gold miners, but most pundits are looking at gold in 2021 as being a key asset to hold. Some are citing, you know, expectations of the gold doubling value to $5,000 per troy ounce. I mean, that's probably a bit fanciful, but certainly I think the trend is going to be up in the new year.
Indeed. So, I mean, when we're sort of looking at let's take the FTSE 100. So we've seen a reasonable rally from the lows, but we're still lagging the US counterparts in terms of, you know, overall performance. Mm. And that's probably something that's quite frustrating for UK-based investors that have the majority of their exposure here in the UK. I mean, what's your feeling sort of going forward into 2021 if we're looking at London's main index? Do you see there being some catch-up to the US counterparts there, and, you know, possibly some opportunity in London listed stocks? Or do you still think that, you know, due to the, you know, weighting towards tech stocks, which has been, you know, very much an investor favourite in the United States, that we're just not going to see the returns here in the FTSE 100 that we're seeing over in the United States?
Well, I think we've said before that the US sneezes weak catch a cold, and of course the opposite is often true. But we do very much lag the US in terms of our exchange performances. Having said that, I think there is a strategy, particularly with the junior tech stocks, and we've spoken about Myriad before, and of course advertising technology company that inserts content into programming. They dual listed on the US early this year in quarter three, and saw their share price jump as a result from 20p to I think 35-40p. It's currently trading at 46p. So if there's a growing tech company, I think the strategy in that company has got to be to look at a dual listing in the US. And ditto with pharma companies too. We're seeing a lot of pharmaceutical companies that have done well through having a listing on the NASDAQ or similar. I think the UK markets will always play catch up. I think we'll need to see some firm data of economic recovery in the UK before the markets start to play catch up. But certainly at current levels, I do believe the market does still offer good value.
Indeed. Now, I think that's going to be an interesting story that plays out, especially in the first quarter of 2021. Alan, let's now move on to the individual equities that we're going to discuss today. And the first of these is Bidstack. So this is one that we've discussed in great detail. And I did say earlier on this year, if we didn't see materially higher revenues in the second half of 2020, it probably wasn't going to happen at any point for Bidstack at all. However, they've put out a reasonably positive trading statement this morning. We're seeing shares up about 25%, up to 7p. What are you taking away from the trading update, Alan?
Well, it's the trading update we were looking for, I think, Jonathan. And so I know when we've spoken in the past, you know, you've been highly sceptical of their model and taking it forward. But Bidstack, of course, I mentioned Myriad just now. There are some similarities between the two. In of course, Myriad inserts content, advertising content, into live streaming TV and programming. Bidstack has developed a platform where it inserts advertising content into live gaming. And of course, this is a huge market that outstrips TV and online media, I think, combined. It's just vast. It's currently 151 billion global marketplace, expected to rise to 256 billion by 2025. And there are well over 3 billion gamers worldwide. And there's an awful lot of money spent in this area. And of course, we've seen esports emerge. Bidstack has a partnership with one of the esports ventures that we've discussed in the past. But as Bidstack have grown and evolved, the CEO James Draper, of course, last year put out the market expectations for greater revenues than were actually delivered. So of course it was a disappointing year for them. And of course James Draper himself came in for quite a slating online, and it's notable since then that he has been very cautious in his statements and what he says to the market. So of course the Bidstack have throughout the year been developing and testing their program, and in the results today that they declared, just go back to the half year revenues, they declared half year revenues of 300,000, up from 30,000 the previous year, cash of about 6 million at the bank. And since then, the company have been conducting their work with quiet efficiency in quarter two. And I think that's James referring to the fact that they're evolving the business. They're not shouting about it to the market. They're just going to update as and when significant events happen. The company's seen a step change. Average value orders are increasing significantly, and there's been a meaningful shift in the development with the group. And they're seeing that they have partnerships now with some of the world's largest video games group, and they're generating revenues now from these ads. And with many brands, what were originally tests are now evolving into on-plan advertising. So In other words, the testing phase, we could say, is probably nearing completion, and we're now starting to see meaningful revenues generated from the advertising. And of course, this is revenues generated for advertisers number one, and also for bid stack number two. They've also identified a number of new markets they're going after. But I think most importantly, in financial terms, they've really drawn a line in the sand today and said that they are on track to exceed market expectations for the year. And I think that's the important takeaway from this. Bidstack disappointed last year, but I think now this is the statement that the market's been looking for. And let's not forget, they have a very experienced board. Of course, James Draper, I mentioned. We've got Francesco Petrozelli, Chief Tech Officer and co-founder. Donald Stewart, non-exec chairman for Pregility and others. Derek Wise, the non-exec, former Grapeshot Chief Tech Officer. Of course, Grapeshot is now Oracle. Mike Hayes from Sega Nintendo, John McIntosh from Pregility. And then there's an advisory board, Andrew House from PlayStation Sony, Will Kesey from Ad Colony, Walt Disney, Brian Eder, EA Games, Jonathan Epstein, GameSpot, Pete Beeney from Spotify. So all these people are on an advisory board with Bidstack, helping the company to fine-tune, tweak the platform, and get it right. And I think, as I said, Bidstack are now nearing the end of that testing process. They're starting to see meaningful revenues come in. And I think it's an incredibly exciting prospect. And certainly, we're seeing the shares up 22% at the moment in early trade. So very encouraging and very much looking forward to what 2021 will deliver for the group.
Indeed. I mean, if you're taking the trading statement there on face value, very encouraging words written there. It'll be interesting to see what those numbers actually look like in the full year, because you have to bear in mind now that this is a company of a 27 million market cap. If they were to see, roughly a doubling of revenue in the first half, to say that, argument's sake, 600,000 in the second half, million revenue for the year, they'd still be trading at 27 times the sales there. So that's going to be something that I think the market will pay some attention to, given the number of new entrants coming into this market. So again, very much looking forward to see what these numbers are in the new year. I'm sure, Adam, one that we'll be discussing them.
I think also the Myriad comparison is worth looking at, bearing in mind Myriad are generating revenues, I think, for about 2.2 million for the current year, or expected to deliver. They have a market cap of 110 million now, and that's after their listing in the US. Now, of course, what Bidstack will do in the longer term, who knows? But I would expect that they may well be looking in that direction. But that's just my speculation. There's no, the company's not said anything about that at all. But yeah, I think the US markets, Nasdaq in particular, values technologies on a far racier rating than the UK. So I think 2021 is going to be a very interesting year for Bidstack.
Indeed. So look forward to going through those numbers when we get them. So moving on now, Alan, one that we have discussed in detail before, but there's been a raft of news for them. It's ECR Minerals. What's the latest from them?
Okay, ECR Minerals, Epicode ECR, an incredibly exciting year of developments for the group. And of course, I mentioned earlier, we spoke about gold, the potential for gold going forward. ECR have a number of 100% owned prospects smack bang in the middle of Victoria, Australia. And the Victoria area got a great history for gold mining. The Creswick license owned by ECR is close to the Ballarat gold mine, which has been operating for years. And there is a geological feature that runs through Ballarat that runs into the Creswick prospect. Currently, in 2019, some drilling was undertaken there, and some very significant samples were located and identified. Up to 80 grams per ton was the best sample pulled out of the ground there. They are currently talking with partners. COVID and movement restriction in Victoria has limited the ability of some of the potential partners to get to site, but nonetheless, discussions are continuing with third parties, and we expect to hear some news on that very soon. Worth bearing in mind, of course, there are a lot of similarities with Greatland Gold and the Havieron prospect. Greatland Gold, of course, joint ventured with Newcrest Mining on the Havieron prospect, the Havieron gold mine. There's an estimate of 4.2 million ounces of gold in the Havieron resource for Greatland Gold. And Greatland Gold now, with the joint venture, owns 30% of that and has a 1.2 billion market cap. ECR, of course, owns the Creswick prospect, the Bayliston prospect. I'll come on and talk about Bayliston in a second. It has royalty agreements on prospects for Avoca, Maumbal and Timor, where it's already received cash payments, and the company is well funded. ECR currently has a market cap of just 26 million. So, you know, there's huge growth potential here going forward. Moving on to Bayliston. Bayliston is northeast of Victoria. ECR have now set up an operational centre at Bendigo, which is central Victoria. And Bendigo has there its brand new diamond drilling rig, which it now owns outright. It has an operational headquarters there where it can obviously take or transport the drilling rig to either Creswick or Bayliston or the Tambo prospect as required. So Bayliston, there are a number of workings there. The HR3, Historical Resource 3, the largest of the workings. The Black Cat prospect is notable. And in all these prospects, they've already undertaken drilling and sampling in previous years. The Black Cat prospect is immediately to the south of a licence area that Newmont Mining has applied for. And Craig Brown, the CEO, has already said that the company has had interest from bigger players, some of whom are going to come and view the Bayliston prospects. Of course, to the west of Bayliston, you have the Fosterville mine, which is the most profitable gold mine in that region in Australia. And as Craig said, it's literally printing money, producing about 500,000 ounces per year. Its owners, Kirkland Lake Gold, bought the mine several years back, seen a 2,200% increase in the share price since then, and made a number of its shareholders millionaires. The company, the production costs for Fosterville are some of the lowest in the world for a producing gold mine. So all bodes very well for both Creswick and Bayliston. The company acquired the Tambo licenses, which are in eastern Victoria, two new license areas in Swifts Creek, Omeo, and the Haunted Stream, which is a fantastic name for a gold prospect. There is recorded gold production of 205,000 ounces and 25,000 ounces in those two areas. But what is of note is that the incumbent geologist at ECR Minerals, a chap called Dr. Rodney Boucher, grew up in Bruthen, which is near to Tambo, and did his third-year thesis at university on the Tambo crossing. So he has a lot of knowledge of the area too. So in summary, there are a number of prospects, gold prospects for ECR that are coming to fruition. And you know, note the valuation comparison with Greatland Gold. You know, Greatland Gold's 1.2 million valuation with 30% of the Havieron resource with Newcrest. If anything like this happens for ECR, it could be very exciting indeed.
I mean, looking at this chart over the last 3 months or so, very exciting moves here from beneath two pence up to now currently trading with a buy price of just above four. I mean, where do you think this could go? Obviously, very difficult question to answer, Alan. But you know, it seems like we're on an exponential move to the upside. I mean, where do you think this valuation could take the share price?
That's not for me to say, Jonathan, because it all depends. I mean, I think if what you can say is a bit, because of course we're all looking for benchmarks in this market and comparisons. And I think if you look at Greatland Gold, you know, where Greatland Gold was at the start of the year compared to where it is now, it's got a valuation of 1.2 billion and it owns 30% of the Havrian resource. Now, if Kresik is proved out, I should also note with Kresik that ECR have also put in an application for the mining license area immediately south of Kresik, which is called Outer Ballarat. And they also yesterday announced that they brought in a geologist, Adam Jones, as a non-exec on the board as well. So Adam is very knowledgeable in the region, has worked with many companies on prospects in the region too. So they're really growing the expertise that they have on tap on the board there. So really, it's I think if we see a joint venture in Kresik along the lines of anything that Greatland Gold have done with Newcrest Mining, then, you know, how long's a piece of string? I don't know. But I think certainly in excess of where we are now.
Yes, indeed. So a very interesting story there, and I'm sure one that we'll be touching on again, because there's been a raft of positive news, and I feel there's probably some more to come from ECR. So moving on now, Alan, to the last stock that we're going to discuss today. And again, it's one that we have been through in some detail in the past. This is on the market. The property website is making inroads into a market that's previously been dominated by Zoopla and Rightmove. They're up 5% today, but they've had a recent instalment of in terms of an update, a trading update, giving some guidance on recent performance. What's been happening there on the market?
Well, I think what's interesting about on the market, and again, we're looking at upside potential and comparisons, such as the comparison I made with ECR and Greatland Gold just now. On the market are a property portal for agents and new home developers selling or renting. And unlike, of course, the market leader is Rightmove. So if you talk to anyone about property portals, you've got Zoopla, but Rightmove, I think, is the best known and the highest profile. And of course, Rightmove has a market capitalization and which really reflects the valuation placed on this online property portal. So on the market have developed a model which is different in the agents, the estate agents themselves are at the heart of the strategy as their shareholders. They bring them as shareholders, and the program that on the market are undertaking, once it's completed, they'll have up to 3,000 or just under 4,000 estate agents and lessee agents operating just under 7,000 offices nationwide as shareholders. And having these people on board, obviously there's support, because they automatically go to the site and will spend money on the site. And the company on the market also uses the portal to advertise new homes. So it's working with the likes of Taylor Wimpey, Barrett's, Persimmon, Bellway, seven out of the 10 UK's 10 largest house builders. And of course, this is very much the disruptive company that's come into an established marketplace with Rightmove. And it looks as though they're already having an impact. Earlier this year, Rightmove announced its half-year results. Revenues have fallen 34% to 95 million. Operating profits down 43% to 61 million. And earnings per share and average revenue per advertiser had also fallen substantially too. Now with on the market, I should also say that Rightmove has a market cap of around 5 billion too. So I mean that gives you some sense of the valuation that's placed on the market. On the market shares, on the other hand, have a market cap of 91 million. And on December the 14th, early this week, the company announced it expected to deliver revenues and adjusted operating profits above market expectations for the full year to the 1st of January. The revenues would be no less than 22.5 million. Now, Rightmove half year revenues at 95 million. So, you know, obviously, the revenues are still way in excess of on the market. But on the market also has net cash of 11 million with no borrowings. It will be advertising extensively as it goes into 2021 to continue growing its market share. But I think the story here is that as Rightmove valuation falls, on the markets is increasing because on the market are basically taking away market share from Rightmove. So you've got Rightmove with a valuation of well over 5 billion, five and a half billion, and on the market with a valuation of 91 million. Probably the valuation for on the market should be somewhere between the two. But either way, given the way they're growing the business, given the market share they're gaining, and also the fact that they've got really the operators in the market, the estate agents, the letting agents, in as shareholders, to me says that once they've got a significant market share alongside Rightmove, which they're already moving towards, they will be the force to beat. So either way, I think the shares, you know, we can see the growth the shares have already delivered in 2020, and I think we're going to see another year of exponential growth for the company in 2021.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.